Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about why we should be consuming those blueberries and apples and strawberries because they're rich in a particular type of nutrient that specifically impacts the hippocampal function of the brain, which means that it's doing a lot of good to our brain. And there's one specific nutrient in that I'll talk about that we need. Also from Suwon Women's University in Korea, B-complex is very important for all adults over the age of 40, and I'll explain why. Then Duke University showed us that the air we breathe can directly impact obesity. And that, of course, impacts heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and a lot of people are dying from polluted air. Also, we're going to examine how a consumption, just normal eating of red meat, is going to worsen the outcomes in heart failure patients, University of Leicester in the United Kingdom. Well, that means about 90% of all Americans, 95%, consume red meat. And we have 1.5 million cases of heart disease a year. We have over 650,000 dying. So it's a big deal. So we should pay attention. Also, diet can help reduce the effects of lead poisoning. And a plant-based diet is the way to go, and I'll explain that. Also, a strong heart and a healthy body, and 3 new studies show how you get there, eating apples. Who knew that the apple was such a nutritional powerhouse? Plus, we're going to look at other issues as well. We're going to examine, for example, today, the OxyContin clan, the $14 billion newcomer to Forbes 2015 rich U.S. families. Who's making that money? Also, the part 5 of Making a Killing, the untold story of psychotropic drugging. We're going to look at before an African-American votes for Hillary Clinton, which is their right, shouldn't you know the truth about her background? And I'll share that background with you. Also, when talking about reparations, a particular member of parliament, a Dr. Sashi Tharoor, has some interesting insights. I just thought from a historical perspective, more than anything, we should know about this relationship, what it cost the Indian nation, its people, that time has allowed us to forget. Also from Chris Hedges, from TruthDig, why I support Dr. Jill Stein for president, and then, if time permits, the media are misleading the public on Syria by Stephen Kinzer from the Boston Globe. Now, this is the first national newspaper, at least the one that I'm aware of, that's come forward and challenged the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, all the network media, all the cable media, that you're nothing more than propagandists because you've lied about the truth. We support ISIS. We support the destruction of Syria because it's part of our regime change. The American public is not up on all this. So we'll bring them up to date on that today. Let's begin. We have a lot to share during this hour. First up, we know that we should be taking a wide variety of colorful fruits and vegetables, a rainbow diet. This is from a University of Japan, and a professor there says that there's an enormous amount of benefits in taking the natural pigments. It's the color in the skin of the fruits and vegetables that's the main healing part, not the pulp. And now, people are looking at this and saying, well, what exactly does it do? Well, it does a lot of things, but he specifically shows that it's a brain food. It can enhance brain function. Of particular importance, the natural red pigment. Now, the red pigment, which is called ASX, which is astaxanthin, astaxanthin, is abundant in, oh, let's say, raspberries, cherries, watermelon, and it's very, very good for you. It's one of the most important nutrients also for your eyes, but no one has looked at it as far as its benefit for the brain until this particular study. And what they found is it promotes neurogenesis in the hippocampus in the concentrated dependent manner, and it elevates learning and memory capacity from the hippocampus. So that's good news. So for all of you who have someone, maybe yourself, who are finding you're beginning to forget, or someone who has cognition issues, this will help. So that cup of raspberries, strawberries, cherries, watermelon, red peppers, red plums, it makes a difference. But one of the most concentrated sources of this would be in the red currants. Now that's seasonal. We are in that season now, so take advantage of that. From the Suwon Women's University and the He University in South Korea, they found that supplementing with the B vitamins B6, B12, and folic acid improve cognitive function, and especially if a person had mild cognitive impairment. This was just a 12-week program, and they gave them these relatively low-dose B-complex, and it was published in the Journal of Nursing Scholarship, and it made a big difference. I would suggest on a daily basis, in order to protect your homocysteine level from going up, you don't want it up, you want it down, lower the better. You want to take 1 milligram, that's 1,000 micrograms of methylated B12, 1 milligram of methylated folic acid, 50 milligrams of B6, and B1, 50 milligrams, and that will help tremendously. It'll help your brain, it'll help your concentration, it'll lower your homocysteine level. It's all around good for your brain. From Duke University, published in the Journal of Federation of American Societies of Experimental Biology, they found that air pollution is creating a weight gain as well as a cardiorespiratory and metabolic dysfunctions after just 3 to 8 weeks of exposure to air pollution. I was lecturing in Los Angeles not long ago, and a professor and his daughter drove me from the airport to the lecture and back again. The daughter had just returned the day before from China and from Beijing. She's a student there. And she said that you could not believe it. When you're up in your apartment looking out, you see nothing. And no matter what kind of air purification system they have, everything has this either red or yellow or black particulate matter all over the floors, the drapes, the furniture, everything. You can taste it. She said when she went downstairs to drive the airport, when she put her hand straight out, her arm, she could not see her fingers. That is severe pollution. And yet it's becoming more and more common for a simple reason, because they have not made an aggressive move to switch over from coal-burning power plants to solar or wind or wave. They are making an effort at this moment, and they'll end up making some major steps, but it won't help the 1 million dead Chinese a year from the coal. And that's not even the worst part of the country. In the parts of the country where they actually do all of the refining of the coal, that's where it's really terrible. People living in California, you're getting China's air pollution. It comes across the Pacific Ocean. In fact, you're getting a lot of it, more than any other part of the United States. So my suggestion is that everyone who can afford it, buy yourself a high-quality indoor filter. Have one in your car. in your home, in your office, ideally. But let's say you cannot afford it. Then put plants. The rubber plant and other plants, the ivies, are extremely good at pulling in the particulate matter and the carbon dioxide and giving off oxygen. So that would be two ways of doing it. Also, I would be taking those nutrients that are known to help with the body's detoxification. Ginger, garlic, onion, shallots, all are good to have each day. Otherwise, you're going to end up with air pollution. And it can also disrupt your metabolic activity. So you end up gaining weight even though you're not overeating. And it ends up giving you the bad LDL cholesterol. In one study, it increased by 50%, higher than what it was, and triglycerides went up higher, and cholesterol went 97% higher. So you can end up with diabetes simply because of breathing consistently polluted air. One good study that I just read this morning I want to share with you is about red meat. I'm on a worldwide campaign as we speak, the beginning of it, to try to debate wherever possible those who believe in the paleo diet actually causes disease, and the high-protein diet, the meat-based diet, and to give a reasonable argument that a plant-based diet, a healthy plant-based diet, is the way to go. The science is on our side. If you look at all the scientific studies published in the peer-reviewed literature showing the benefits of fruits and vegetables, there's none that are negative. They're all positive. You cannot find any studies on the benefits of becoming healthier by eating a meat-based diet. They don't exist. So it's our conditioning. We feel we have to have meat. We don't. In fact, I can show you some of the strongest people on the planet today are vegans. Now, there is a difference between being a vegetarian and being a vegan. The difference is that the vegetarian can have or will have frequently like eggs or dairy. But the vegan has nothing like that. But sometimes it takes a transition. So I would rather have people go from eating a purely meat-based diet to eating less and start to make a transition so that when they finally give up meat altogether, it's not because of a heart attack or stroke, it's because of wisdom and insight. They realize it's just a better diet to have. So this is the latest study to support a plant-based diet. From the University of Leicester in the United Kingdom, quote, "A new study finds that worse outcomes in patients with acute heart failure are linked to higher levels of TMAO, the major source of which is thought to be the component that is metabolized by gut bacteria during the digestion of red meat. Previous studies have linked the trimethylamine in oxide with higher risk of death in chronic heart failure. Note the researchers, but their study appears to be the first to find such a link in patients with acute heart failure." So the more meat you eat, the greater, the higher your risk of death. And you got a heart problem and you're a meat eater, you really are playing Russian roulette. Also, a new study on a plant-based diet shows that for people in, let's say, Flint, Michigan, who have all that contaminated lead in their water and other contaminants as well, the more aware they are of chlorophyll and garlic and onions, the sulfur group, and also broccoli, asparagus, cauliflower, all of those sulfur plants will help chelate out the lead out of the body. Now, lead is poisoning a lot of children, and lead is a naturally occurring neurotoxin that, once ingested, can cause cognitive and behavioral problems and, in severe cases, even brain damage and death. And no amount of lead in a child's body is safe. So we need to get the CDC and the President of the United States to issue a national emergency and get a group of physicians and nurses into these communities, starting with Flint but going elsewhere, and doing chelation therapy. Now, that's the best way of getting lead out. It's safe and it's effective. But you can also do it using plants. But you have to take chlorophyll on a daily basis. So the green juices, that's good. And the nutrients that actually are good at getting rid of lead in the body, vitamin C and zinc, calcium, those are all good. Also, finally, a good amount of apples are really important for you. Now, we've all heard the apple a day keeps the doctor away, okay? But what isn't arguable is that research report after research report confirms apples are a natural superfood packed with antioxidants and nutrients that contribute to good health. So I looked at the research today, and there's just hundreds of studies about how apples help your heart. They prevent cancers. They lower cholesterol. They're good for digestion. They're simply terrific. In fact, in a recent debate in the British Medical Journal, the medical experts argued that statins do more harm than good, especially for those who do not already have heart disease. The expert also suggests that more than 80% of cardiovascular disease is attributable to environmental factors like unhealthy diets and smoking and alcohol, lack of exercise. And rather than resort to statins as a primary method of prevention, experts advised people at low risk of developing heart disease benefit from eating an apple a day to improve the condition of their hearts and prevent heart attacks and strokes and other vascular disease. Apples will lower your LDL. They will lower your cholesterol. They'll lower your C-reactive protein levels, all of which are indicators of a heart attack if they're higher. In fact, the Arthritis Foundation this January reported further evidence that eating apples on a daily basis can lower levels of cholesterol as well as C-reactive protein. So the key is apples are so plentiful in flavanols and the flavon-3-ols and anthocyanidins and flavonoids, all of which are found in the apple, mainly in the skin. That's why you want to buy organic and use that. So that's the latest on health and nutrition. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come right back. Got a lot to share. Please stay with us. Holding on. For all of you who are just joining us, have a lot to share. We're going to talk in a moment about Ontario rules veganism a human right legally protected against discrimination. And also Monsanto, according to this article in India Today, quote, faked data for approvals, claims its ex-chief person. So we'll talk about that. And the paleo diet is dangerous and increases weight gain, diabetes experts warn. I'll share that. And also, air pollution killing millions threaten global health systems. This is additional material from the World Health Organization. All that in just a moment. Let's go to some of these other issues. This is from Common Dreams. The World Health Organization over the weekend warned that skyrocketing air pollution levels are killing millions of people in thousands of cities and are poised to take an enormous toll on public health services worldwide. Quote, we have a public health emergency in many countries from pollution. It's dramatic, one of the biggest problems we're facing globally, with horrific future cost to society. And that was from a Dr. Neria, a head of the public health at World Health Organization. Air pollution leads to chronic diseases which require hospital space. Before we knew that pollution was responsible for diseases like pneumonia and asthma, now we know that it leads to bloodstream, heart, and cardiovascular diseases too, even dementia. The latest figures come from pollution data from 2,000 cities. We're not talking about hamlets and small towns and villages, cities, where growing populations have led to a surge in traffic, construction, and power generation, leaving huge areas to grapple with toxic smog and rising greenhouse gases that cannot be resolved without an overhaul of infrastructure. and there's no money for the infrastructure. And so 4,400 people a day, every 24 hours, are dying in China alone from air pollution. So that's a lot. So I just want to make people aware of that, that once again, the best that you can do, ideally, is to live in a greener environment or bring green into your environment. In Ontario, here's what they say. This is from Amanda Froelich. Hospitals will now have to provide vegan meals upon request, and students cannot be forced to eat to dissect animals. Vegetarianism and veganism are two trends rapidly increasing in popularity, and now, thanks to a recent ruling, individuals in the province of Ontario, Canada, will have an even easier time sticking with their plant-based diet. So, if you're a student, you don't have to eat the animal. You can say plant-based. You don't have to dissect any animals. And the same is true in hospitals. We should do that in the United States as well. Monsanto in the news again. This is from India Today, from Dinesh Sharma. Quote, Jagadism says the company, quote, used to fake scientific data. The debate on genetically modified brinjal variety continues to generate heat. Former managing director of Monsanto India, Jagadizian, is the latest to join the critics of BT, that would be BT Cotton, perhaps the first industry insider to do so. He worked with Monsanto for nearly 20 years, including 8 years as the managing director of Indian operations. Spoke against the new variety during the public consultation held in Bangalore on Saturday. He elaborated by saying the company, quote, used to fake scientific data, end quote, submitted to the government regulatory agencies to get commercial approvals for its products in India. The former Monsanto boss said government regulatory agencies with which the company used to deal with in the 1980s simply depended upon data supplied by the company while giving approvals to herbicides. Quote, the Central Insecticide Board was supposed to give these approvals based upon the location and crop-specific data from India, but it simply accepted foreign data supplied by Monsanto. They did not even have a test tube to validate the data, and at times the data itself was faked. End quote. Quote, I retired from the company as I felt the management of Monsanto USA had exploited my country. He is 84 years of age, and he said that from his home. So why should this not be open to, since it's a major public health issue, to a larger investigation and hold those who had done this responsible? The fact that it's now being talked about doesn't mean that those people should be exempt. At the very least, they should be shamed if found guilty. From the University of Melbourne, published in the Journal of Nutrition and Diabetes, a new study has revealed following a low-carbohydrate, high-fat diet for just 8 weeks can lead to rapid weight gain and health complications. That's the paleo diet. Quote, it is dangerous, increases weight. And lead author, associate professor, says this type of diet, exemplified in many forms of the popular paleo diet, is not recommended, particularly for people who are already overweight and lead a sedentary lifestyle. He says mass media hype around these diets, particularly driven by celebrity chefs, celebrity weight loss stories in the tabloid media and reality TV shows, are leading to more people trying fad diets backed by little evidence. In people with prediabetes or diabetes, the low-carb, high-fat diet could be particularly risky. We've been saying this all along and citing the scientific literature. The paleo diet is not a healthy diet. Thought I'd share this with you. The political crisis in America is severe. We're all aware of that. So people have choices. Later this week, I will be doing an in-depth analysis of the foreign policy behind the Clinton movement, meaning she and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Business Roundtable and those major corporate leaders who believe in the neoliberal policies, meaning fair trade, which is not fair. It's caused millions of Americans to lose their jobs, plants to close, and then we've been exploited. But they continue to smile and tell us they're doing something in our favor, and it's just a matter of educating people. Once they're educated, once they know the truth, then we have to respect their freedom of choice to make the decisions they feel are in their best interest. So I'll be sharing that part of the story, just very specific. You know, what did she do? Was she for wars? Yes. All wars? Yes. Did she support all dictators and ruling families in the Middle East? Yes, including those that support jihad and the radical Sunni Wahhabist religion? Yes. Why isn't Bernie Sanders using this? Well, there's a problem there, because where Bernie does come down on the right side of some issues, man, his foreign policy and hers are virtually identical, and he doesn't go against the military-industrial complex. So I'm going to also this week do an in-depth analysis that I will present in essay form that I am writing now about why all of these people running for office, Democrat and Republican, to a person, are militarists. And some are unabashedly so, like Donald Trump and Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and Hillary Clinton. I'll give the military more. Have you stopped to see how much they're actually getting? Have you actually done an analysis? I have, to see how it's spent. Do you actually have any clue as to the trillions of dollars collectively over the last 12 years that they have spent, and who's made that money? And it has not made us safer. It's made us more insecure. So wouldn't you do just a little bit of homework, just even a smidget? The answer is no. I consider all of these people to be fully capable of doing research and analysis. They're not stupid people by any means. So therefore, they're being disingenuous. And the question is, why? Then you better do another step and see, what are they connected to? Who's paying them? Who's behind the scenes? Who's consulting them? Well, when a Monsanto top exec is on Hillary's payroll, I can understand then why she is promoting the Monsanto line. So all that's coming at you later. So then who does that leave? Well, that leaves Jill Stein. And hence, the old ideas that buttress the ruling class and promise democracy and growth and prosperity, the neoliberalism, the austerity, the globalization, the endless war, a dependence on fossil fuel and unregulated capitalism, have been exposed as fictions used by corporate elite to impoverish and enslave the country and enrich and empower themselves. So says Chris Hedges. Chris is unique. He is not just a spiritual warrior, and that's how I would classify him. He puts himself out on the front line. He does not protect himself with a foundation or a front group or a think tank. He's out there. He cares. He cares about we the people. We're looking at 62 billionaires have as much wealth as half the world's population. Now think of that for a moment. That's 3.5 billion people, and you got 62 people worth more. That fact alone is revolutionary tender. We're entering a dangerous moment when few people, no matter what their political orientation, trust the power elite or the ruling neoliberal ideology. The rise of right-wing populism with dark undertones of fascism looks set in the next presidential election, as it does in parts of Europe, to pit itself against the dying gasps of the corporate establishment. We are caught between the jaws of the monsters, and our escape route is narrow and diminishing. Playing the old political game, attempting to reform using the old rules, doesn't work. We must focus exclusively on revolt, on overthrowing corporate power, to reclaim our liberty and save the planet from a coup d'etat delivered by the fossil fuel industry. If we fail to revolt, we will see the numerous mechanisms for control enshrined in our system of inverted totalitarianism, meaning wholesale surveillance, militarized police, empowered to use lethal force against unarmed civilians, the loss of all civil liberties, the impoverishment of the majority of the citizenry in the name of austerity, the use of the military as a domestic police force, indefinite detention without trial, government-ordered assassination of American citizens. That will spread like a wildfire across the landscape. And did you hear Donald Trump the other night? He said he's a great supporter of the military and he'll build an even bigger military, and he supports the veterans. This week, I am writing a report specifically for each of the presidential candidates. I would like the members of this radio audience to take my two-part series on Gulf War Syndrome, Killing Our Own. Everything in it is completely and fully vetted. It's pure scholarship and it's documented. It can be used in a court of law. But more importantly, it should be used in the form of public opinion to show if you say you support our troops, why? Why do you support our troops? Do you know what our troops have done? Do you know that we've killed 30 million people or caused the death of 30 million people worldwide since the end of the Second World War? I'll give you the examples of the countries, the Congo and other places, but we didn't invade the Congo, didn't have to invade the Congo. All we had to do is pay people for the minerals, the really important minerals that are used in our cell phones, our satellites, our weapons. They'll kill each other. What about when good people do bad things? We cover for them. What about when we lie to get into a conflict? We cover for the liars. We expunge their record. We say, let's go forward. Do we care about our people? We don't give a damn about the average person. The average person has no value at all except as a commodity in the current neo-political agenda. That's all you have is a value. Even if you're sick, you have a value to the medical industrial complex. If you buy something, it depends upon what you buy and how you use it. If it's a junk food that makes you sicker, it's a value to those who sold it to you and to the other side of the system that will then have to treat you and charge you outrageous amounts of money because they profitize getting you sick and they profitize maintaining your body once you're sick. They've gamed the entire system. How do you reform that? You don't. It's not reformable. In my personal opinion, not a single institution, not a single current political social dynamic is reformable. You must completely detach from it and start over. But that's not how we think. That's not what we do. So I'm going to show you the actual cost of what it means to put a person, boots on the ground, or in the sky as a drone person in another country. I'm going to show you what it is to that person living in that country. I'm going to show you what it is to the person who comes home and 23 people every day who were in that conflict zone commit suicide. So exactly how, Mr. Trump, do you intend to help those veterans? Not question the wars or conflict they're in, but simply give more money to inefficient and completely corrupt bureaucracies like the Veterans Administration to cover it up through the Department of Defense, to engage in regime change through the CIA and the national security agencies, to attack anyone who exposes it, including whistleblowers. I'm curious as to how far your capacity to project a solution in a problem lies. Clearly, there is no sense of showing it. Maybe it's hidden. Maybe it will reveal itself. But all I see is just extraordinarily outstanding, narcissistic, intemperate personality, perfect for the common social network today. The battle before us is global. This audience understands that. It's a battle being fought on myriad fronts, including Greece, Egypt, Spain, Venezuela. If you doubt me, go to those countries and see how the average educated college graduate did live and now lives. The ravages of climate change, the ruthless exploitation of international finance, and the evil of American imperialism and militarism are as present outside our borders as they are at home. The greatest enemy before us is not radical jihadists. We're already aligned with them. We support them. We supported giving a radical Islamist, a Sunni. Remember him? We later hung him for doing what we gave him the tools to do. We gave him chemicals of mass destruction. We gave him illegally manufactured Fort Detrick chemicals. He used them against the Kurds. He used them in the Iranian conflict because it served our needs for regime change in Iran. Later, he was then hung in no small measure for using those chemical agents. Where did we support the Shia? The Shia are not the jihadists we see. The Sunnis are. We don't even understand the history of these religious conflicts. It's not that difficult to understand. We align with them. Who's the most aggressive, religious, fanatical group on the planet? The Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia. But they're our allies. They buy a lot of weapons from us and they sell us their oil. If they didn't have any oil and they didn't buy weapons, long ago, they would have been considered a rogue state. And that's the irony of what we're doing. Do you really think that the economies of Qatar, Bahrain, of Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, do you really think they're going to be sustainable now that the price of oil is in the mid-20s and probably going to drop into the teens? They may try through illegal means to artificially stimulate the price back up, but there's no demand and they're oversupplying, especially Venezuela and Iran. They're not going to cut back on how much they're pumping out of the ground each day. They're going to increase it. They have to because there's riots, food riots. Food stores are closed. Schools are closed in Venezuela. But our media isn't there, so it's invisible to us. It doesn't exist. But it's real nonetheless. So what happens to our partners in the Middle East, the ones we have supported, both politically, ideologically, and militarily, when they no longer have the bribe money to pay for their people not to kill them? You're going to see massive turmoil in the next 3 to 5 years in the Middle East, or probably sooner, when everyone in the Middle East has to start paying for things they'd gotten for free, and they no longer have the jobs and they're taxed. That's too much of a cultural transition for them to accept in a short period of time, but they're all running out of cash. Last week on Friday, Saudi Arabia's, for the first time in its history, was downgraded to an A-. Well, that's a big drop. When you're AAA plus to an A-, that means you're not doing well. You don't have enough cash flow. We're seeing massive debt everywhere. And I'll get to that later on this week when I'm talking on Thursday or Friday. I'm going to do a special in-depth discussion on bonds. They're the $100 trillion glass that's just fallen off a cloud, and it's taken a while to hit the ground. When it does, it'll shatter. And I'll tell you about the difference between that and Wall Street and other things. By the way, the Chinese have now lost $4 trillion out of their bubbled economy, and it's going to go a lot further down. So here's where we're at. Our real compatriots do not like this. They speak in foreign tongues. They come from different cultures and faiths. They fight on the streets of Athens, Madrid, and their square. It is only when those individuals link arms, when you make common cause against the Hydra-headed monster of global corporatism and American imperialism, that there's a chance for victory. Revolutions of all types come in waves. They ripple around the globe, feeding off each other's ideas, passion, and energy. The French Revolution in 1789 and the Haitian Revolution in 1804, the only successful slave revolt in human history, were direct products of the ideas and experience of the American Revolution. The revolutions of 1848 reshaped Europe. The 1917 Russian Revolution inspired numerous revolts, including the 1919 uprising in Germany. Eastern Europe was remade in the revolutions of 1989. So it is time for another change. The imperative of revolt dramatically reduces the importance of elections. Elections managed by the elites mean nothing if radical movements are not powerful enough to disrupt and dismantle corporate power. To deserve our support, a political candidate or party must hold fast to the goals of a fiercely anti-capitalist, anti-militarist movement. Those running for office must serve as the political expression of such a movement. For without movements committed to radical politics and buttressed by sustained acts of civil disobedience, meaning strikes, lockdowns, mass rallies, marches, oil and gas pipeline blockages, and coordinated disruptions of the systems of corporate power and the war industry, and what I've said many times on the show, stop buying their food. Stop going into their box stores. Stop buying their products made where once Americans made them at a living wage. Now someone else is being exploited to make them in India or China or Brazil or Bangladesh. Try to buy made in USA. Stop becoming a mindless consumerist and become an ethical consumerist. Ask yourself before you buy something, am I buying too much? Do I really need this? Can this be recycled? Which banks do you have your money in? Do you have your money in pensions that are then used by hedge funds in some of these regimes around the world? If so, take it out. And by the way, a lot of 401ks have been really reduced substantially in the last 7 years. And I suggest that you invest that money in yourself. Get out of debt. You don't need to buy a home and finance it through them. Think before you buy something. Will this indebt me? Can I sustain this? And only make a choice based upon the worst case scenario. If you cannot survive a worst case scenario, then don't buy it. The focus of our energy must be on building nonviolent mass movements keyed to issues such as immigration rights, Black Lives Matter, fighting male violence against women, including prostitution, the anti-fracking and environmental justice movements, which have spawned groups such as Delta Five, the cancellation of all student debt, the demand for a living wage, the destruction of animal agriculture and industry through the practice of veganism, health care as a human right, the struggle to dismantle the security and surveillance state and expose the crimes of empire, the abolition of trade agreements, in other words, junk, burn up, tear up, throw up, NAFTA and the Trans-Pacific Partnership and CAFTA, and the rebuilding of militant unions. These movements must build alliances with the oppressed around the earth, including the Palestinians. We do not have the luxury or the right to pick and choose whom among oppressed people is politically convenient to support. Everyone is going to rise or fall together. Hence, Chris Hedges is supporting, quote, I support Dr. Jill Stein, who is running to be the Green Party candidate for president after having won her party's nomination in 2012. I support Stein because she understands that this is primarily about building a global movement, not about participating in an election. She, unlike Bernie Sanders, knows that this movement will never be realized within the Democratic Party or by paying deference to the power elites, the Israeli lobby, or the arms industry, or the military establishment. She grasped that until we name, destroy the evil of militarism and imperialism, genuine social and political reform, indeed democracy, is impossible. She does not want to work within the corporate establishment. She wants to dismantle it. And all the pundits who tell us not to waste our vote miss the point. It is time to stop playing the game. Quote, we're in the kind of magical moment. It's an existential moment which is very personal and very real. That's what Stein said in an interview in Baltimore for Chris's podcast. It has enormous potential for transformation. The question is, which way is it going to go? Now, I personally think, since I voted for Ralph Nader and other third-party candidates, I have never once in my life voted for a mainstream Democrat or Republican, nor would I, because I know what I'm also voting for. So people say, well, isn't it stupid, Gary, to waste your vote? To the contrary, a wasted vote is a vote for corporatism, imperialism, and the establishment. That is a vote that has no value. That vote, to me, is like soiled toilet paper. Voting for someone who may lose, and all probably will, at least establishes a commitment to a higher ideal from which others can then use that initial defeat to gain strength over a period of time until one day that has a chance of actually meaning something. What is standing in the balance, I believe, are environmental disasters. I believe that the one city in America that will see the greatest environmental destruction in the shortest period of time is Miami. More on that on an upcoming program, because it's all built below the sea level and it's all built on limestone, which is just like, it's just like Swiss cheese. And hence, it's weak, it's soft, it will crumble. So the basic foundation upon that is going to sink. And yet, as everybody's putting their money in there, there is no cure for stupid. And there's a lot of stupid people involved in rushing in at any price to live in a place that is going to be gone in the near future. So we have to look carefully at what nature will do in droughts, in water shortages, in water crisis, in food crisis, because you can control a people as long as they're fed and housed. You cannot control anyone when there's starvation and they have nothing to lose. And what we saw in the Arab Spring is just 1 millimeter movement compared to the big push that's about to happen. I'm Gary Knoll. Now let's go over and listen in to the Young Turks talk about Hillary Clinton and the black vote.
Bill Clinton wanted to pass a crime legislation, and it was 3 strikes, Bill. So if you have 3 felonies, you get a life sentence. Hillary Clinton was the first lady and aggressively lobbied for it. She gave a speech in 94 defending this piece of legislation. Now, she had many different defenses to it, and some of it were good parts of the bill, including community policing. And here in this clip, she's going to be talking about gangs, not just all kids, not just black kids. But when they talk about super predators, they almost always meant young African-American kids. And so here is Hillary Clinton talking about what should be done with them.
Not just gangs of kids anymore. They are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators. No conscience, no empathy. We can talk about why they ended up that way, but first we have to bring them to heel.
Bring them to heel. Very rarely was the term super predator ever used in reference to white kids. Perhaps sometimes in reference to the Columbine kids, but almost always when talking about black kids in inner cities who are in gangs. So I'm giving you the full context. It wasn't just that she was talking about super predators, and it wasn't just regular old kids walking down the street. But was it racially used, that term? Yes, it most certainly was. It was used over and over by Republicans, adopted by the Clintons, to scare everybody. Oh, watch out for the super predators. They have no conscience. They have no empathy. We got to bring them to heel. So is that quote accurate? Hell yes, it's accurate. That's why we went and got the video for you guys. So I remember when we first ran the story based on a story by Michelle Alexander, who's one of the leading African-American scholars in this country. People couldn't believe the quote. Well, here she is saying it. If it wasn't clear enough, here it is again and again.
Not just gangs of kids anymore. They are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators. No conscience, no empathy. We can talk about why they ended up that way, but first we have to bring them to heel. Not just gangs of kids anymore. They are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators. No conscience, no empathy. We can talk about why they ended up that way, but first we have to bring them to heel.
Bring them to heel. And by the way, let's be clear. Columbine, of course, happened after 94. So when they were talking about this, it was almost completely used for African-American kids. If you think this is the family that was so great to African-Americans, that's one opinion. But you just heard her yourself. Your call. Young Turks.
Okay. By the way, I'm going to be having a phenomenally interesting and insightful original program later this week, and I want people to just put it on your calendar. I'm going to be doing an in-depth look at the JFK assassination from a different perspective with new people you've never heard of who have new information that no one is aware of, and we will break it exclusively on our program. Also, we are in the process of interviewing to hire a full-time person and a part-time person, a very nice wage, beautiful working conditions, who are really up on social media because we want to get our messages out to even more people than the 253 million last year. So if you're really good at social media and know all the – I'm not. I don't Twitter. I've never Twittered or tweeted or any of that stuff. But I turn that over to people who are a lot brighter than myself in that. But it's one way we can get our messages out. You can give a call to Jason at 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422. Now, I want to finish up today with a look at Making a Killing, The Untold Story of Psychotropic Drugging. This OxyContin clan, the power, the money made in this, and instead of telling people, here's how we can get people who have pain off these medications without them becoming addicted, they're just being exploited. Listen in on to this audio clip, please.
And if you are a normal human being who's lived through ranges of emotions of normal life experience, if you've known the exhilaration of the birth of a child, a niece, a nephew, and the devastation of a divorce and the loss of dreams, and answer honestly those questions, you will diagnose yourself as bipolar. And the instructions that come back along with the diagnosis or the warning that you're probably bipolar say, print this out and take it to your doctor.
And how simple is it for anyone to go online, answer typical life questions, and be given a psychiatric disorder? Here are some randomly chosen volunteers. People of all ages leading normal lives.
Do you feel sad, blue, unhappy, or down in the dumps? Sometimes.
I've had periods of great optimism and other periods of equally great pessimism. Yeah, that happens a little bit.
I get tired for no reason. Sometimes.
Life is pretty full. Not really.
For no apparent reason, I sometimes have been very angry or hostile.
It's hard for me to concentrate on reading.
I am restless and can't keep still.
My heart beats faster than usual.
I have trouble sleeping.
Shortness of breath.
Gained weight.
Trembling hands.
I have an idea that most of these are going to be sometimes.
Everyone has.
As in everybody?
Somewhat.
Somewhat.
Just a little.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, my score totaled 42. Bipolar disorder, moderate to severe symptoms. Wow.
The answer reflects on the presence of depressive symptoms.
Currently suffering from an anxiety disorder.
I may be suffering from bipolar 1.
Minimal to mild depression.
An obsessive compulsive disorder.
Guess that means I'm psycho.
Guess I'll go to a psych. To try to see if I can work it out, get some meds or something.
All told, 50% of these everyday people were assigned a psychiatric diagnosis and instructed to get treatment. By this measure, half of the U.S. population, some 150 million Americans, could be classified as mentally ill.
Now you have a direct line of consumers just walking in with a little pre-survey that says that they potentially can have bipolar, ADHD, stress, anxiety, any of those categories, and they just need to take this assessment tool and say, okay, that basically that is what you have, and here's your drug.
And psychiatrists are now clamoring to make such assessment tools mandatory. Take TeenScreen. Under the guise of a suicide prevention program, mental health tests are administered in the schools to diagnose and drug children. Children such as Chelsea Rhodes, who left for school one morning an average teenager and returned home with a psychiatric diagnosis.
The Rhodes family in Indiana, their young girl went to school one day, and all of a sudden they told her they were taking her into a room, and they move her into a room and give her the 10-minute TeenScreen test. And Shortly after taking the test, she's pulled aside in the hallway and she's told she has two problems, basically two mental problems. One, obsessive compulsive disorder, and social anxiety disorder.
Her parents were stunned, dumbfounded. They didn't know that Teen Screen was going to screen their child. They had not been asked permission.
The people at school had told her that she was mentally ill with these two conditions based off of a computer test that took her 10 minutes to answer. One of the questions was worded, if Chelsea went out a lot. She answered no. We'd ask her why she answered that way. She said, because Mom, you and Dad don't allow us to go out on school nights. I have to be home to do my homework and take care of our household chores. The other question was, do you ever feel nervous or anxious when you're in front of a group of your friends or peers? Chelsea answered yes. She explained to us that because when she has to stand up in front of a group of people and give a book report in one of her classes, she's very nervous. You know, I'm 43 years old and I'm nervous in front of every one of you today, but that doesn't make me mentally ill.
I believe, I absolutely believe that the survey for Teen Screen was intentionally structured to flag as many children as possible as having a possible mental health problem.
And who created Teen Screen and wrote its survey? Dr. David Schaffer, a psychiatrist with extensive ties to the pharmaceutical industry. Schaffer's questionnaire is anything but scientific. In a study he himself conducted, Schaffer admitted that 84% of all students were falsely flagged as suicidal. But what was not admitted is how traumatic the consequences can be. Alea Gleason was only 11 years old when she took a screening test at her middle school in Texas.
It was seventh grade, and they had all the girls go into the cafeteria because they said that a lot of girls have depression, so they was working on some depression screen.
Next thing I know, there's those middle schools telling my husband and I that CPS is there at the school taking Alea because she's suicidal.
I'm like, suicide? I'm not trying to kill myself. I love myself. I've always loved myself.
So I don't know if she was even at the school or they'd already taken her away.
What you're hearing now is Making a Killing, The Untold Story of Psychotropic Drugging, just another section. I'm laying this out, bits and pieces, you to get an idea that every time when Hillary Clinton or someone else wants you to have your child tested to see if they have any kind of mental health problem, the industry, the psychiatric industry, the pharmaceutical company is behind all this. Your kid is not mentally ill. Your kid is not going through anything other than normal life challenges. And therefore, to see that they're diagnosed by some artificial, unscientific means and then drugged means that they do commit suicide at very high levels because of the meds they're on. The young woman was hospitalized for 6 months after she was told she had two diagnostic conditions and they couldn't get her out. And that is it all. It's all about profits. Profit by putting someone in a mental institution, profits by giving them drugs that they have to stay on the rest of their life. It's a crime against humanity. And it's also the source of my upcoming major new documentary. I'm Gary Noll. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.